You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grevet. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grevet. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. If you're interested in advertising with us or sponsoring one of our shows, send us an email to ads@foodintegritynow.org. Our sponsor today is Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures. Hi, I'm Carol Grevet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach, and I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com. My guests today are Lance and Lyndia Leonard. Lyndia Leonard is a mother of four, grandmother to nine, and keeper of the earth. She has devoted her life to making the earth more user-friendly through an array of spiritual, political, social justice, and business projects. Lance Leonard has spent over 30 years in the nutritional products industry and in the field of personal and spiritual growth. Today, we're going to be talking to Lyndia and Lance about whales and dolphins and how they started their petitions to assist the whales and dolphins and what this means for all of us. Lyndia and Lance, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carol. It's great to be here.
Hi, Carol. Good morning. Really looking forward to the show.
Oh, me too. We're going to be talking about a subject that is near and dear to my heart. And I know that you've spent a number of years being involved with whales and dolphins, so I'm really excited to get this information out to people. So when did you start having an interest and really learning more about whales and dolphins?
Well, I'll start with, 35 years ago when we moved to Puget Sound. And within a year of our being there, we actually had a lone dolphin come into Penn Cove, and we were so excited about it. Lance having watched Flipper when he was younger, and me just having a real interest in animals. So we actually went to the water and in wetsuits and had a swim with a dolphin. So that was our first time.
What was that like?
That was amazing. You know, it was funny when we were out in we went out in just a little rowboat, and this dolphin had shown up, and it was very unusual, enough so that the University of Washington sent out some of their scientists to figure out what was this lone dolphin doing swimming around. You know, this was a kind of a dolphin that they don't usually see in Puget Sound. And so we went, we found out about it. We saw the dolphin. We went out in this little rowboat, and there was a moment's hesitation right before we got in the water. Both of us looked at each other like, wow, well, what if they're not really like they are on TV on the Flipper show, you know? and then we quickly said, oh, what the heck? And we jumped in the water and just had the most amazing experience with this dolphin. And in my case, I got to swim with her twice, and it was a female dolphin, we found out from the University of Washington.
Wow, that's amazing. I've experienced that many times, and there's nothing like it.
Yeah. Well, that was our initial introduction. And then a few years later, and this is a whole story unto itself that I won't go into, we happened to be in the water, not swimming, but on a boat. And all of a sudden, we're surrounded by an incredible, incredible pod of orcas.
Actually, I think the story is worth mentioning. You can go online and see a YouTube video about this. It's quite an interesting story. This story of our time with these orcas relates to a much earlier event in the 60s when some folks went out and captured a bunch of wild orcas. And this was before there were really any laws about how you could do that or if you could do that or any of that kind of thing. And they, you know, they really made a mess. They killed a whole bunch of orcas and then they weighted them down to sink them to the bottom so no one would know. They killed a bunch of babies. These guys were coming to basically get orcas to put in places like SeaWorld and places like that.
And that is really worth mentioning, Carol, because your listeners can look that up online. Lolita is the name of the only surviving orca from that time. And there's a whole movement afoot to free her. She's at the Miami Sea Aquarium now. And so anyway, that was our introduction to...
But just to finish that story up, what happened was when they did this, the whales used to come into this area every year. And all the old timers who lived on Whidbey, this is Whidbey Island, Washington State, said that every year they would see the orcas come into Penn Cove. And once that happened, they stopped coming. And so by the time we got there later in the 70s, we had just, you know, heard about this story, but we really didn't know the whole story. And so 17 years went by after the, you know, the capture, the famous capture. And we just happened to be going out on the water that day. And it was the first day that, at least as far as anyone knows, that the whales came back into the cove. And so we just felt like what an amazing stroke of luck that we just happened to be there when that happened. And there were seven of them. And at first they wouldn't let us get anywhere near them, which of course we quickly realized that it was up to them, not up to us. And so we went to the middle of the bay and just kind of waited and watched them. But eventually the biggest one, the large male came over right next to our little boat. And it was just an awesome experience. So that was our first whale experience.
So we actually spent maybe 5 hours that day in with this pod of orcas. And you know, because you've been in the ocean, when you're with a whale or a dolphin, the amount of energy that passes through your body is very different than at any other time. And for me, I experienced just a quietening. So that was really our introduction to whales. But then we actually moved to Hawaii, where we had many, many more experiences with humpbacks and also with bottlenose dolphins.
Both observing them and also swimming with them. Actually, before we moved there, we sailed a boat there, and we had many experiences on the water with them as well. And some close to shore and some mid-ocean, you know, 1,000 miles from land. All of them, though, were amazing. And there was one story that happened on Kauai that ended up getting written into a book called Whale Tales.
Wonderful book by Peter Fromm. Mm. And it's a story of many, many different people and their experiences with whales.
Wow. Well, I know, Lindia, when you were talking about the amount of energy exchange going on in the water when you're with the whales or the dolphins, I'll just share a brief story. One time I was swimming with the dolphins and I was swimming off a boat and I was with a group of people. I swam with about 300 dolphins for 3 hours. And when I got out of the water, I thought I had been in the water about a half hour to 45 minutes. And three hours had gone by. It was just, you know, I tell people, you know, it's right up there with the birth of my children as the most amazing experience ever. So we've established that you have a strong connection to the whales and the dolphins. So today, the reason I wanted to do this show was because there's an issue that's pretty disturbing that's happening in our oceans right now to the dolphins, whales, and other cetaceans. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what's happening?
Sure. This is an issue. It's actually a sonar issue with the Navy, although I have to say that generally speaking, the sound pollution in the ocean has gotten really out of hand, as have plastics and all the other things that we're doing right now that are not in support of this mother ocean.
What is sound pollution? Can you explain that for our listeners?
Yes. Sound pollution is anything that is in the ocean that's outside of the natural environment. So that can include anything from container ships coming across the ocean. And now there's some consciousness about that. And the new ones that are being built are under tight regulation to do the kinds of things that actually mitigate the effects of that sound. Because in water, sound actually penetrates at about a little bit over 90% rate, penetrates the body. And when we're listening to sound, if you've ever been to a concert or anything like that, and it's really loud, that sound that is coming to us is somewhere less than 10% of the sound that's actually being generated. That's what that is what our bodies actually take in. So when we're in the water, we actually take in.
It's actually 99.97% of the acoustic energy that is in the water is reflected from the body. In the water, because the body is mostly water, almost all of that energy gets absorbed by the body. So it's a completely different kind of experience. Sound in the water is completely different. A good example is when the Navy did some exercises in Southern California one time. There was a whale researcher off the Washington state coast over 900 miles away who recorded an amazingly loud sound, 140 decibels. This was over 900 miles away. So sound travels differently in water, and it also, does different things to the bodies that are in the water.
So it really penetrates the animal's body. And why that's important is because that penetration can actually cause tissue rupture, hemorrhaging, the other kinds of things that the animal might have temporary hearing loss, or they might bleed to death. Mm-hmm. Or they could just have a complete, almost explosion, rupturing, all of those vital organs in the body.
Or they might have serious damage to their ability to navigate, even if they don't die, and still, essentially end up dying because of that, because they're so sound-oriented. The whales use sound to navigate.
Whales and dolphins, they use it to navigate, to communicate with each other, to communicate with their young, to teach their young. So really an animal in the sea without the ability to navigate is really, or to hear, is really a dead animal. Maybe not instantly, but definitely in a matter of a few weeks.
Okay. And even though our focus is on whales and dolphins, this actually affects many sea creatures, not just cetaceans.
Mm. Well, so that's the sound pollution. So talk to us about the sonar and what's happening with the Navy.
Well, about 20 years ago when we were living on Kauai, gosh, has it been that long? we were contacted by somebody actually from the Monterey Bay area who alerted us to the first generation of this kind of behavior on the Navy's part of using this sonar that affects whales and dolphins. And it was going on right there on Kauai. And we called the mayor of the island at the time. The person who was the mayor is a friend of ours. And she had no idea that it was happening right there on her island. And so we ended up, making a petition about it and to raise awareness, but it ended up being so popular that the Navy ended up holding hearings on Kauai, which they weren't going to do, which turned out to mostly be kind of a sham. They didn't really amount to anything, except that they did raise awareness of what was going on. And so since that time, we've been aware of the issue and, occasionally, hearing about it, but more recently, about a year ago, I guess it
was 7 months ago,
Lindia got an email from a friend on Kauai saying, "Hey, they're doing this again, and they're stepping it up to another level. That's really, really dangerous. And would you please let your friends know about this?" And so she was going to send an email to our list, and she mentioned it to me, and I said, "Well, gosh, Lindia, there's this new thing called signon.org where it's part of moveon.org where you can make your own petition and they'll put it out to their list. And that way you can get, maybe instead of a few hundred signatures, you might get a few thousand. So it sounded good to Lyndia. So she had also received, she had a session with a healer about 6 months before that.
A medical intuitive.
Yeah, and this person told her that there was a message from a grandmother whale and that she needed to go down to the Dominican Republic right away and connect with this whale. And then she said, and if you don't go, the whale will get the message to you anyway. And so Lyndia was busy doing other things and didn't make it down there, but realized, I think, after the fact that this must be what the message was about, because as soon as she put that petition on to signon.org, within, I think, a week, there were over 25,000 signatures on the petition, which was completely mind-blowing to both of us.
And tell me, basically, what, in a nutshell, what does the petition say, or what are you requesting?
The petition was addressing specifically the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, that the Navy had to file in order to be granted a permit.
So there's a whole process that goes on with this, where first the Navy has to file an EIS and receive comments, and then after that, then they have to ask for permission from the NOAA, or the Department of Fisheries, which is part of NOAA. And then NOAA makes their decision, and there's comments taken before that. And then the third part, which is what we're in right now, which is NOAA has already okayed it, despite the well over half a million signatures that we gathered expressing people's concern about this. They nevertheless gave the Navy permission anyway. And now it's the final comment period. We're in the last, I think, 2 weeks of that right now. So our feeling is that many, many more people have become aware of this because of the petition. There's been at least 2 million people who've seen the petition, and about maybe 600,000 that have signed the various petitions. Right now, our thinking is along the lines of, there have been many other organizations who've contacted us, everybody from Greenpeace to NRDC and other big organizations who've expressed interest in partnering. So we don't know what the next step will be. It could be that there's a lawsuit. It could be any number of things. But the gathering of the signatures will help in those future efforts.
And we're also, Carol, part of our teachers teaching to us is that our job, when we're passionate about something, our job is to educate people, because it's through that education and that understanding that we can really take action. And so the more of us who are aware of it, who know what it is, who know what's going on, the more we can connect the pieces and really make an effort to shift this really travesty that's going on in our oceans. And this is, again, as I say, not just the sound, but also all of the pollution that we dump into this mother ocean that is what gives us all life. We couldn't have life on the planet without the ocean.
Well, let's talk about that. What significant roles do whales and dolphins play in the food chain?
Okay, well, let me just back up a bit.
Okay.
And say, Lance mentioned that our initial interest was over 20 years ago when we were in Hawaii. And we are very fortunate to have the advice and at times the counsel of a very wise teacher. And so not understanding this was wrong, but not really understanding point of this, you know, what's going on. We actually asked our teacher, and our teacher said to us, gave us an education about whales and dolphins. And basically what it is that whales are the wisdom keepers. Whales work on the mental level of the body, and they actually help us as humans to stay in balance, in addition to aiding in that balance with the earth. And I'll just give a quick example of the humpbacks, because scientists have been really perplexed about what they do. Every year, their song changes in September, which the teaching that we get is September is really the opening of the new year. And so they sing to that opening. They sing to that evolution of the Earth cycle. So, so they're not only helping us stay in balance, but they also help the Earth stay in balance. And the dolphins work on the emotional level. And so they help us with, and you've been in the water with them before, so you know they actually really are a very wonderful aid to us in our own emotional healing.
You know what I call that when I'm in the water with them? It feels to me like a heart opening.
Yes, yes. Which is, you know, the heart is really the gateway to our emotions and to understanding our emotions. And so our wise teacher said to us that part of the reason these sound devices were being installed, not just off the coast of Hawaii, but really all over the world, is because they disrupt that flow between the ocean creatures and the land creatures and between the ocean and the earth, is that they aid in that balance. And so they were being installed in places where there was a rapid evolution of consciousness. And they were installed deliberately, maybe not knowing by the people who were actually putting them in, but they were installed in places to disrupt that cycle of rapid evolution of consciousness.
Wow, that's fascinating.
On a more, on a less esoteric level, I would also add that, you know, the oceans, I mean, we sort of take the oceans for granted, but they cover 3/4 of the earth, and they control the weather, or at least have a huge impact on it. And, you know, the balance of life in the ocean is very, very complex and very important because, you know, you might think, well, so what if there's one species missing? But all of these things are interlinked, including like the phytoplankton that grows in the ocean. And I'm sure that many people would understand how you can upset the balance of one thing and then all of a sudden it affects something else because, you know, one creature eats another one. And when that one goes away, then the other one can proliferate to unnatural levels, which can cause other problems. And when you think about that in terms of the algae, which provide a huge percentage of the oxygen that we breathe on the planet. A lot of people think it's from the rainforest, which is certainly a significant source, but actually the microscopic algae are even a more significant source. And when we start messing with that balance, then it starts to change many, many things, including the weather, including the balance of oxygen on the planet. And all of these things have an impact on cycles of growing crops, and many, many other things. So you might think, you know, like, gosh, you know, that's pretty wild that something as simple as, you know, eliminating a species could affect our ability to grow food. But it's really true because everything is connected. And as soon, you know, it's great to see some scientists who are starting to understand that. A lot of traditional scientists are still looking at each thing as if it's separate and not connected to anything else. The faster and sooner that we understand the connections between things, the sooner we can make much better choices than what we've been making.
So, okay, so you explain why they might be doing this. Why do they say they're doing this?
Well, initially 20 years ago, they said they were doing it to measure global warming. Because again, as Lance mentioned a little earlier, sound travels through water very differently. And it actually travels differently through cold water and through warm water. And so initially they said they were using it to measure global warming.
They can do that because in the ocean, there are actual rivers and currents of waters that are different temperatures and different salinity. And by blasting sound through them, they can see, they can actually create measurements. So that was the first story that they said about this. Later, though, the story changed.
And the story now is that it's actually to detect enemy submarines. And I had someone post a comment on our site just this last week saying, hey, isn't this World War II? Technology and thinking. I mean, who has submarines now? And they're not that there aren't people who do, but the ones who do have submarines are not the ones that the U.S. considers an enemy or a threat in any way. So they say it's to detect enemy submarines, but the truth is that we have satellites that literally cover the Earth, every single inch of the Earth. And on our website, it says within 2 or 3 feet, but the latest technology is that the satellites actually cover within a few inches of the Earth. And so through infrared technology and some of the other things, if we really are intent on looking for submarines, we can look for them in a much more efficient way through the skies and not necessarily, you know, through sound. Now, I'll also just say here, because in the U.S., so much of our focus and attention is on money and how people make money, is that once a technology is in place, and we have to remember that with very few refinements, this technology is at least 20 years old. And we all know how much technology has changed during the last 20 years. So we look at that. And we know that there are other ways of doing it, but there are moneyed interests. People who've been making this technology, big corporations that, you know, make really millions, billions of dollars from this ongoing outdated technology. And they are not about to change unless there's some change on a grander level that says we're going to do this differently.
Another thing to add to that, Carol, is that one of the industries that's using loud underwater sounds right now is the oil and gas exploration industry in the ocean. And so, you know, it's hard to believe that there's no link between the two, meaning that that there's, you know, there's bound to be interests who want to make it okay to do the kind of damage that happens in order to use the technology for profits. So I think there, you know, it's not quite as simple a discussion. I think on the level Lyndia first talked about is really the ultimate game plan, but there's also many other players who stand to benefit from the destruction.
Well, isn't that always interesting? Because if you follow the money, you usually find the reason. In so many cases, you know, it's about greed and profit.
Yeah.
And which I think is really tragic, and it's something that needs to shift. And I think we're all working on that.
Carol, may I mention our website?
No, I was just going to ask you, what is your website? And let's give your Facebook page too.
Good. We're at Whale and Dolphin Watch, and the "and" is spelled out, whaleanddolphinwatch.com. And our Facebook page is the same, and there's also a link from our Whale and Dolphin site to our Facebook page. And the Facebook page, we try to post at least every day some interesting article related to cetaceans. And we're very interested in ongoing education for people, because once we understand that, we can make this different. And part of us making it different for the future of the world is through educating our children. And many of the responses that we've had are from teachers or other people who are working with their students, junior high, grade school, junior high, and high school, on this sound issue, wanting to become educated about the sound issue. So so we invite people, if they have an interesting story or something they want to share it with us. And we, of course, monitor it to make sure it's appropriate. But the more we know, the more all of us know, the better equipped we are to really make a change.
Yes. And that was going to be my next question about what can listeners do to support this change and to get us moving in another direction?
Well, right now, the most obvious thing they can do is go to either the website or the Facebook page and go use the link to sign the petition. The link is most easily found, excuse me, on the website. And I want to just make one little correction. The Facebook page is actually Whale Dolphin Watch. The website is Whale and Dolphin Watch. They're both called Whale and Dolphin Watch, but the address at the Facebook page is leaves the and out. It's just Whale Dolphin Watch. So, but either way, if you go to the website, you can get to the Facebook page. And if you go to the Facebook page, you can get to the website. And both of them have links to the petition. So if people would go and read the petition, and if they agree with it, sign it, and then share it with their friends, that would do a lot of good. Because right now, the more signatures we have, the better position we'll be in to make an impact up in the next coming weeks, which there are many other things happening, like the California Coastal Commission right now is considering banning this activity, at least in California waters. Now, that, of course, is only a small step. But still, if we can do that, then it's like the building of the beginning of some momentum. So we are going to be at that hearing and presenting the signatures that we have, or at least talking about them with the Coastal Commission in a couple of weeks. So the more people that sign, the better.
And how many people do you have on that petition right now?
Last time I checked, 82,441, but that was, about an hour ago, so it's probably more by now.
Great. And is this the third petition you've done?
This is the third.
Okay.
And our first one, we had a little bit longer. We collected about 550,000 signatures.
That's amazing.
And so we know that it is time to bring this issue forward, and it's time for us to make a change. And there are people all over the world that are really aware of this, becoming more aware of it all the time, and wanting this to change. People who honor the earth and honor the oceans.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that about the petitions, because I know several people have thought there's just been one petition, and they might think, oh, I've already signed that. But there's actually three petitions. So we encourage people to, again, find that petition in the places suggested and then read it. And if you agree, sign it.
Good. Carol, I'll just also mention that the system that we're working through, signon.org, which, by the way, are fabulously wonderful people and do very good things in the world, but their system will sort out duplicate signatures. So if one of your listeners thinks, I've already signed that, or I think I did, I'm not sure, they should go ahead and do it again. Our system will sort that out.
Wonderful. Well, in closing, do you have anything else you want to let our listeners know about this important issue?
I would just add that, there's a lot of information on the Whale and Dolphin Watch page of the website, and that there's more being added all the time. So I would just encourage people to go there and educate themselves and learn about, what's really happening. Like, for example, the U.S. Navy funds 50% of the cetacean research worldwide, and that it's been documented that if the research is done by Navy-funded research, it's 2.5 times more likely to conclude that there's no harm being done to the whales and dolphins.
Isn't that the fox guarding the hen house scenario, which we see exactly. So often?
Exactly.
That is. And I would also, if I might just add to that, having sailed across the Pacific, is that I had no idea how big it is. I mean, we look on a map and it looks big, but when you're on the ocean, it is huge.
Especially when you're traveling across it at 5 miles per hour.
Yeah. And the way the Navy determines if it's safe to emit this sound is that they actually have somebody on watch who looks, and if they don't see any cetaceans, they blast out the sound. And as Lance mentioned earlier, at times it can travel as far as 900 miles. And when you're in the ocean, it's like standing on the shore and looking out. How much do you really see of a whale or a dolphin?
You can't see very far when you're on the deck, even of a big ship.
Yeah.
You just can't see that far.
So that is not really an adequate way to ascertain whether or not it's safe to do the sound. I'll also mention to your listeners that on our site, there is a little clip of the sound being emitted, and the effects on some orcas in that area. It just happened that a person was on the beach and recorded it. And also you can see they did it with a cell phone, the effects on the behavior of the orcas, their attempt to get away from the sound. But it'll give your listeners a sense about what that sound is like.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. So that's on your website.
That is on our website.
And I would also encourage listeners to, especially if you're in different areas, I mean, we tend to be a little bit West Coast focused, but we want to know about things that are happening in other places. Ultimately, we will have something on the site that shows a map of the world showing where all of the various things that are going on with whales and dolphins are happening. And so the more people let us know about it, the quicker we can get up there. We're not heavily funded. This has been paid for out of our personal money. So there's not, you know, we can only do what we can do here. But if we work together, we can get more done.
Do you have a donate button on your website?
We do. It's a new thing. And we've partnered with a nonprofit so that we can legally do that. And so, yes, that can happen now. And that's actually already helping with things like us appearing at the California Coastal
Commission. And also are helping with our being able to pay our webmaster, who's been wonderful to work with and done things, many things for us for free. So it's great to be able to at least reimburse him a bit for his cost. So, Carol, you asked in closing if we had any other things we'd like to say. And what I would like to say is for whoever is listening to this, this may not be your passion. But if it is not your passion, find out what your passion is and do it, because right now we really need that kind of passionate commitment to making change in the world.
And there's so much change needed.
I agree.
So no shortage of places to contribute. And thank you for your contribution, Carol, and with this show. It's really, I know it's doing more and more every day, every week, and every month to wake people up.
Yeah.
Which is what we need.
Well, we're all about education like you are too. And I think it's really important to get the information out, and those that want to learn will listen. And, you know, we all can do our part by what you said, following our passion. Find what you're passionate about and go for it and do it. Thank you very much, Lance and Lindia, for being on the show. Again, this is a subject that I feel very strongly about, that we really need to see some major changes happening. And it just takes people getting involved. Once again, thank you. And we'll look forward to seeing what happens with this next petition. And we will keep our listeners posted, too. And that website, one more time, is whaleanddolphinwatch.com. The Facebook page is Whale Dolphin Watch. And so go and join in. And if you feel passionate about it, do something about it. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we will be back next week with another great show.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.